You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the Henday built. By the line matching of Jay Woodcroft, that he was like, McLeod's going up against Carlson, I'm keeping McDavid against him. And they're like, okay. But then he also kept McDavid away from Eichel, and that was the line that was killing the orders.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, I don't think it's what cost them the game. I mean, the Oilers needed to play better in the second period, and they'd had a better chance to win that game. So on the list of, like, what went wrong last night, you know, there's a few things that are in front of this, but it's what you started with, so let's go there. On a day where Connor McDavid had said, we're going to play our best game of the series, you know, it felt to me like one of those days where McDavid, you know, might just come out like gangbusters, right? Just might have one of those one periods for the ages, because that's what he's capable of. But he never got a chance because he played 5 minutes and 21 seconds. They didn't stand him on the blue line during the song. They didn't put him on at any commercial breaks when he was rested. They just kind of let Vegas dictate when they used the sharpest weapon in the game. And I don't love that approach to a game that was that important. I think it should have been a lot more McDavid in the early going of that game. And it continued, really. It continued, you know, through the second period, too, where Draisaitl got eaten up by the Eichel line. So I just think that, you know, Jay Woodcroft maybe got a little bit too fancy with trying to figure out the matchup game rather than just, you know, letting McDavid go, winding him up and letting him go and seeing what he might have been able to do. Because I just think 5 minutes and 21 seconds with a season on the line for McDavid. And it continued right through. Like the third period, when they were waiting to start the third period, McDavid's line was on the ice. And Cassidy threw his line out, and Woodcroft pulled McDavid's line off the ice to start the third period. I just think when you have Connor McDavid, that guy can play through anybody. And I think in a game like that, you have to give him the chance to play through anybody. So just overthinking it a little bit on that front. But again, there were lots of other reasons why they didn't win, and I don't think that's near the top of the list, but it's definitely one that's notable.
So it's one thing to talk about the forwards. Let's touch on the D. You know, Nurse and CeCe kind of had a tough night with Eichel as well. If not that pairing, what pairing would you have put against that grouping of forwards?
Yeah, I mean, well, they did all the damage, right? And so I understand why they wanted Nurse and CeCe. I mean, that's kind of what they're supposed to be about. The problem is you want your puck mover and Bouchard out there with the McDavid line, right? So if you want to go head-to-head McDavid with Eichel and say, have at it, go, you know, then you're, you know, by extension, you're playing the Bouchard against that line quite a bit too. And I think they would feel like, from a defensive standpoint, Bouchard and Nurse might be more stout, Nurse and CeCe might be more stout defensively than Ekholm and Bouchard. But I mean, Bouchard played a ton, and he was on it, and I think they probably would have been okay giving that a go. More than anything, you know, they needed to defend better in and around their own net, no matter who was on the ice. They needed to do a better job as a group of being harder around their own net and making life difficult. I mean, Vegas got flat-out freebies. When you're tapping pucks into the net in the crease area, and no one's even getting a stick on you, there's problems.
Well, yeah, it's interesting about that. The third goal, the point shot, when it goes up off his shoulder, you're kind of wondering, you know, what's going on there? Who was around him? You know, Skinner even said, he goes, usually he just puts that puck into the net mesh behind him, and away you go. So now you look ahead. It's very early, but hey, we'll have fun. Frank Saravalli reporting, he's hearing that there's a good chance you could see Steve Staios.
Yeah, I heard that.
To general manager, and Ken Holland obviously would stay on as a mentor and maintain his president of hockey operations.
He thought it was likely on your podcast today, I think was the word he used.
Yes.
Yeah. So, listen, I'm not here to refute any of Frank's reporting. Like, Frank's plugged in, and he's a heck of a good reporter, so I'm not going to sit here and say no, or anything like that. This is my read on the situation. I would be surprised if Ken Holland took his hands off the wheel after the way this ended this year. I would be surprised if he took a step back. He signed a 5-year deal, and I think he wanted to win a cup. and I think he still does. And I think I would be surprised if he took a step back from the general manager's role. He had a hell of a good deadline, and he was the decision maker. I think if you're the brain trust of the Oilers, are you worried about potentially losing Steve Staios? Yes, I think you definitely are. So I think getting creative to figure out how to keep Steve Staios in the organization is important. But I might submit to you that the Oilers don't want Ken Holland to take a step back from the general manager's role. That if you're the owner and if you're Bob Nicholson and company, you're looking at the way Ken Holland ran things this year and the team that he pieced together, and you're saying, no, no, we need him to stay the guy and the decision maker. And so I'd be surprised if Holland stepped back and took his hands off the wheel, but I completely agree with Frank's assertion that they need to be aggressive in protecting Steve Staios as an asset and a potential future general manager. So the reporting makes complete sense. I'm just not sure Holland would be ready to take that step.
Now, what if it's the GM in name, but Holland's still the guy, and it's like a GM on-the-job training for a year?
Yeah, I mean, Steve Staios is either ready to be a GM or he's not. Like, you're going to give him the job with training wheels? I just don't think. I think if you want to put a succession plan in place that doesn't involve the next guy having his hands on the wheel this upcoming season, right, then you just kind of you figure it out and you do it behind the scenes. Like, if you want to have a conversation, if the Oilers decide that Steve Staios is their next general manager and they want to do a deal with him where they say, listen, after next season, this thing is yours. You will be the guy. And then they explore having Ken Holland stay on, in president of hockey ops. Who knows whether he would want to or not. But you organize that in a way where that can be a smooth transition into next year. But I don't think you kind of half-ass give him the job and Ken half-ass steps away. And it's now who's in charge and who's the final decision and who's the... Like, when Steve Staios is ready to be named a GM, he'll be named a GM, and it'll be like, you are the guy, right? And here's your president of hockey operations. So I think the organization can probably figure out a way to safeguard his employment there with a succession plan where he understands the vision, right? And I don't know that you need to punt Ken Holland from the GM position this upcoming season in order to have that succession plan in place and an understanding of it. The other thing I'll say about the Oilers, man, they got a lot of people with voices there. There are people, I mean, you got the owner, you got Bob Nicholson, you know, you got Ken Holland and deciding what he wants to do. Paul Coffey is very much part of it as well. There's a lot of voices in there. So the idea that the decision is already made and it's fait accompli, I'm not sure about that idea, but I understand the logic.
Joined by Ryan Rashok talking all things NHL and specifically the Oilers right now as they lost out in the second round to Las Vegas or Vegas Golden Knights, depending on how you want to call it. I said earlier that I believe this owner or the coaching staff, and then along with whatever voices, the manager and stuff, they've got to figure out which part of their game they have to improve, then work backwards. Say, okay, which players are not going to help us in that situation, and which, you know, then what do we have to do to bring people up to speed in those areas or to bring guys in that can do it? And I'm not saying that it's retooling the whole team, but if, you know, with that logic, which area of the game do the Oilers need to improve the most next year to be more comfortable as they move deeper into the playoffs?
Well, I think their ability to defend at a high level in the top four needs an upgrade. Right? So, you know, you can circle Cody Ceci and say if they can upgrade that position, you're going to have natural development with Evan Bouchard. Ekholm, hopefully he comes back and is similar in quality to what they got him at the deadline for here. Nurse is Nurse. And I think they need an upgrade in that spot there where CeCe is. So if you can find yourself a top four right shot guy, I don't see it coming internally. I think that Desharnais is what he is. And so that would be a position I would circle and say for the Oilers to be more stout defensively and be able to defend at a Stanley Cup level, I think you need to upgrade that position there. And then you'll have some internal development. It's going to be difficult. You're going to need guys on entry level. So they need to commit. Like Dylan Holloway, you know, this was a bit of a waste for Dylan Holloway this year. He was not usable in the playoffs. And when they weren't using him much during the regular season, we were consistently scratching our heads saying, they're not going to have an answer on this player by the playoffs if they keep this up. He's not getting the experience in the American League. He's not getting the minutes in the in building trust in the NHL. And he ended up completely in no man's land, and that's where we saw it heading. So I think a little bit of a commitment to developing these guys so that maybe, you know, you have room for an upgrade because you've got some entry level guys on your deal, on your salary cap.
Shauger, quickly, Nick Bjugstad, Derek Ryan, Matthias Janmark, Klim Kostin. Now he's an RFA, but the other three are UFAs. How many of those four do you think are back next season?
I think you try and get Bjugstad back. I think you try and get Kostin back. I mean, Devin Shore is going to want to test the waters somewhere else, and this coaching staff clearly, you know, wasn't going to use him and didn't trust him that much. So I think he looks to move on. I think Matthias Janmark, you know, I think the coach trusted him, and if there was a good relationship there, maybe. But at the same time, I know he wasn't happy with the way things played out this year, and he may want to go somewhere where he has a little bit more of a guaranteed scenario for himself that might be available here. Ryan is an interesting one, though, right? He's 36. And, you know, we would need the full update from Baco. Is there somebody ready to step into that spot?
Well, the only option, I was told, is Raphael Lavoie. And it's not a lock, but he would be the, as a right winger.
But I heard there were good steps. Some good
steps. He was their best player in the second half. Yeah. He recovered from his knee injury. He was their best player. And so I think he's the one option there.
So I think.
But he wouldn't be penalty killing or anything as a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Ryan McLeod's development might put you in a position where Derek Ryan's utility you can maybe move on from, because I think there'll be regression there with Ryan. He's going to be 37. I think Ryan McLeod showed some good stuff in these playoffs, and I think he's a great skater. That's not going anywhere. Adept in the faceoff circle. There are areas of his game that need to improve, but I think you absolutely can lean on him as a third-line center heading into next season after this playoff performance. And then maybe you can look internally for a fourth-line center to see if you've got that. And now you're saving money on the cap, right?
Would Bjugstad be your fourth-line center?
Absolutely, if you can get him back, right? So McLeod and Bjugstad are, you know, as 3-4. If you can get him done, then there it is. And then you got Lavoie maybe on the right side. I like Kostin, though. I think Kostin was a good pickup. I think he's a fan favorite. I think, you know, as long as the deal is a minimal deal, I think he's a useful player that you want to bring back. It's unfortunate he wasn't used much in this series. Like, he made some mistakes and basically, you know, was an afterthought on the bench, which isn't ideal and makes me think maybe a player with a little more skill might be able to overtake him. But that would come internally, right?
Yeah, I wonder. At times it seemed the coach, like, it was obvious who he trusted and who he didn't, just based on TOI.
For sure. For sure. But, I mean, Kostin, yeah, Kostin,
but it was
whether
funny,
it was
like
a bad penalty here or there, or, you know, we had some turnovers.
Like, I'm going to say this. So I look at Nick Bjugstad and I look at Klim Kostin and I look at their production, just straight out production. And then I looked at minutes played compared to them and Yamamoto. And it didn't seem that Yamamoto, didn't matter what he did, he was going to get to play under Jay Woodcroft. And Klim Kostin, no matter what he did, and even Nick Bjugstad barely got played in the third period, those guys weren't going to play. And I just found that interesting.
Yeah, Dylan Holloway needs to take Kyle Yamamoto's spot in the top six. Like, that needs to happen by the end of next season. Right? That needs to be the trajectory that player is on. Get him in, get him playing, commit to playing him more than 6, 7, 8 minutes a night. He needs to play. And it's unfortunate the way his year went this year. He spent a lot of weeks and weeks and weeks traveling with the team, playing, not playing, 6 minutes, 8 minutes, 9 minutes. They lost him this year. They didn't accomplish what they needed to this year, which was to either have him knock it out of the park in the American League and be ripe as could be, or play in a top nine role, commit to him playing in a top nine role. They left him hanging out in no man's land. And as a result, he wasn't usable in the playoffs, didn't get the experience in the American League or the confidence offensively. And I'm sure he'll be fine. He's a good prospect. Evan Bouchard had a similar year a couple years ago during the bubble year. But they can't have a second year like that with Holloway. They need him to step in and be a top nine forward for them. And all he needs to be is a top nine forward. and that top six is good enough, you can play a top nine forward in it and be okay. Right now it's Yamamoto. They need an upgrade on that.
Do you need to find a room to put Broberg, a spot every night?
Yeah, well, it's crowded. I mean, it's crowded. And I think to get Bouchard done, they might have to move on from Kulak or CeCe if they can. Like, I don't know how you play Broberg regularly, you know, if you believe in Desharnais, and I think they do. I'm not sure how Kulak fits next year.
Well, you have to be pretty confident in Broberg to get rid of Kulak, because that could be disastrous. If you, like, I'm not sold that Broberg's ready. He didn't look great to me. I wasn't hugely sold on him. Now, hey, you know what? Young guy, can he get stronger in the offseason 100%? Maybe not playing regularly, played a part in it for sure. But that's going to, the organization's going to have to be pretty confident that, okay, you know what? We feel Broberg can fill that hole, because Brett Kulak, from start to finish, might have been their most consistent blue liner all year.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, because obviously Bouchard didn't pick it up till after the trade deadline. Yeah, I think Kulak had a decent year, and I like him. I think he's usable. He's been really good in both playoffs. So you want,
yes,
that player. But like, so what are you doing then? So you got Nurse, Ekholm, and Kulak. Okay, you're set on the left side, and it's way too expensive. Way too expensive. Right? Was that like 18 plus million on your left side? Something's got to give, because you got Broberg sitting there. And you like Desharnais because he brings that different style. So okay.
Yeah, but if it's 18 or 16, is it really that big of a difference?
Well, no, it's not. But I guess, I don't know, do you just flip Desharnais and Broberg in and out on the right side on the third pairing, and that's how you get them both minutes? You share that spot between the two of them?
I don't know, maybe Broberg and CeCe in a package deal to get a better right pair defenseman. Just
Yep, a little bit more for need on, you know, side to side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're ready to cut bait on Broberg yet. I do think they believe in the player. I think a similar thing happened with Broberg this year where he was, you know.
Yeah, didn't get to play a ton, I agree.
Like, Philip Broberg needed to play with, like, a really strong veteran defenseman all year to help, you know, to help shepherd him into the league, right?
Yeah.
He didn't get that. He didn't get his year with Duncan Keith, right?
Well, so, maybe next year to start the season, you play Bouchard and Ekholm, you play Desharnais and Nurse, and you play CeCe and Broberg.
Yeah, CeCe and Broberg is your third pairing, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's asking Desharnais to take a pretty big stab.
I thought he was really good from Game 2 to Game 6 in this series.
Yeah, I agree. I like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought, right? Most of this core is coming back. Like, this team is going to return itself a few different looks here and there, but I mean, probably not going to be able to move the dial on the goaltending, right? That's just going to be what it is, barring some crazy deal. I just don't see it. So they're going to bank on internal development with Skinner. Jack Campbell, let's see what he does. Let it be an open competition between those two, and it should be. 7.6 is fine on the cap for two goalies, as long as you've got a decent starter going. But the rest of them are coming back, man. You know, Fogel's got another year, and his number looks okay. If he's going to give you that in the playoffs, you can live with that during the regular season. The Yamamoto one is tricky, though. That's tricky.
Oh, hey, you know, we got to take a break, but I do have a Yamamoto idea tomorrow on the show that might make you go, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. All
right. Okay, I'll have to listen now. Great.
All right, there you go.
Have a great night, guys.